Welcome to Blog Talk. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, which is just about everything. So the subject matter is not very limited on this show. One of the things that you will hear on this show is the truth as we have discovered it, as much of the truth as we can share with you. And that's a lot. You're going to hear it whether you like it or not. And it will hopefully awaken you so that you can live your life to the fullness of Christ. In this day in history, in 49 BCE, Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon and invaded Italy. Well, Julius Caesar was the head of a Roman army. His army was the legions of Rome. And he'd been up in Gaul and other places, and most people don't understand how those armies work, because when you use the word army, they think, well, like our army. But it's not that way. Originally, the way the Romans moved around outside of Rome was they put together these expeditions to go up and mine or to build trade routes or to establish commercial ventures in other countries, and they were financed by the Temple of Janus, usually, not always. But what was done there was that you had shares in the venture. You would take maybe a salary, but it would be limited based upon your share if the venture was commercially viable and produced something of value. So they would go up. They would literally purchase land from local inhabitants, hire the local inhabitants to do much of the work. Most centurions seldom pulled their sword in battle. They were engineers. They were builders. They built aqueducts and rechanneled rivers and mined whole mountains with hydraulic mining. They built roads. They built harbors. This was what they did, and they did it because there was a profit in it. It was a profit-motivated military force, and it was military because everybody was armed. Of course, everybody was armed almost everywhere you went in the world, because everybody knew that they were responsible for law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Everybody knew that they were the enforcers of righteousness, or they were crooks and scoundrels. In any case, you would always be armed, because that's what you needed to be in order to survive in the world. Today, we've given that responsibility over to somebody else in many cases, and that has centralized power into the hands of a few and made large sections of the world subject populations. But anyway, Julius Caesar's crossing of the Rubicon was the taking of this huge military force that was actually a team of engineers and investment groups that were out there making money and protecting those equitable interests of mines, roads, harbors, and trade centers. And they were bringing it back to enforce domestic laws within Rome. And this was against the rules for them to do, that they could amass these armies for private interests, but they couldn't be coming across using those armies against the Romans themselves. And this is what they feared with Julius Caesar crossing the Rubicon. And he was doing it supposedly to keep order. It led to his assassination, and it eventually led to the civil war that brought about the death of the Republic and a rise of imperial power. Civil wars almost always do that. That's because people haven't learned what it really means to be a Christian. And then you'll find people who claim to be Christians fighting each other across borders. And that's, of course, what happened in the American Civil War. In this day in history, in 1496, Christopher Columbus left Hispaniola for Spain, concluding his second visit to Western Hemisphere. Most people don't understand who Christopher Columbus was and what he did. He didn't discover America. It had been discovered many, many, many years before. There had been all kinds of people here I believe that even a personage named Dagawanda, who was an Indian who united the five tribes, was actually one of those early explorers who came to North America with new ideas that he had from the original teachings of Jesus Christ before they were twisted and distorted by modern religionists. And he had a disciple that he eventually obtained who was a great orator, because he had a little bit of a problem with the language because he was actually European. And that orator was known as, or at least the name somewhat pronounced as, Hiawatha, which is where Longfellow got the name of Hiawatha. And anyway, his teachings helped unite the five tribes. His constitution, if you would, that they put together, verbal constitution, which you can actually read, and parts of it will be found in the books that I'm writing now on the subject of the early pilgrims, Pilgrims and Strangers, was some of the foundation for the Constitution of the United States. And, of course, if anybody wants to know my opinion of the Constitution of the United States, they can read Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions. And my opinion is based upon biblical teachings as to the flaws that were either left out of the elements that were left out, which makes it a flaw of the Constitution that should have been in there if the Constitution was following biblical standards, and some of the things they put in there that they should not have. And one of the things that they put in there was this concept of producing or using just weights and measures that we see in the Bible, but in this case it was you were to only use gold and silver as payment of debt. The states were to only accept gold and silver as payment of debt. It was interesting that a famous personality on TV, O'Reilly, recently said that, "I don't know what Ron Paul is always talking about, gold and silver. I've read the Constitution. There's nothing in it about gold and silver." And, of course, that shows you the lack of education that you have in the minds of those who you listen to for information. O'Reilly, this supposedly knowledgeable proponent or opponent or whatever he is of the truth, doesn't even know about Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution of the United States. It says states can't accept anything as payment of debt but gold and silver, which means that every time you pay your taxes and you're not using gold or silver, you haven't paid the debt. And of course, if you read Stanek versus White, which everybody who is educated should have read, knows that you cannot pay a debt with a note. And that brings us to the topic of this week's shows, at least the first topics for this show and the one on Liberty Radio Live, is usury and debt and money. Because it was also interesting that it was on this day in history, in 1862, that the first paper money was issued in the U.S., which was a $5 bill, $10 bill, and $20 bill, according to some sources. But actually, in 1862, they also first produced the $1 bill, which was issued as a legal tender note of the United States, with a portrait of Salmon P. Chase, the Secretary of Treasury, on it. It was a note. It was an actual note. And notes are contracts. But you cannot pay a debt with a note. A portion of the debt remains, because a note is a promise to pay. It's not an actual payment. So every time you give somebody a Federal Reserve note, you have not actually paid for anything. You gave them a note. And in the case of the Federal Reserve, which is different than the U.S. note, it's a three-party note that is between you and the person who accepts it and the person who wrote it, which in this case would be the Federal Reserve. But in the Federal Reserve note, there are two seals, one of the Federal Reserve and the other one of the Treasury. Now, the interesting thing is the notes that you used to have 20 years ago had the, when they were printed up with the Treasury seal that was sold to the Federal Reserve at so much per pound, And then they put a seal on it, which was the Federal Reserve seal. That process has completely changed. The seal has completely changed. The contract has completely changed. And the notes themselves are not actually organic contracts anymore. They're not really notes. They're really, totally, absolutely fiat money. And the ramifications of this would take a lot more than half-hour show. It wouldn't take 30 minutes. It would take more than 30 hours to explain all that to you. But in order to even begin to explain it to you, we always have to talk to you about these things in the context of history. And if you go back to this day in history in 1629, England's King Charles I dissolved Parliament, said that it wasn't important anymore. Now, in essence, today, the Congress of the United States has been dissolved in many ways. It is no longer consulted when it goes to war, and we actually have guys like Panetta and other people out there explaining that the Congress is superfluous to the decisions of the president. He gets to go to war based on whatever he decides with NATO and these other places that you have made treaties with. So it becomes this huge, to try to explain this to the average Joe on the street is a huge task. It is a job 24/7 of an army of people who are knowledgeable enough to explain how things work, because they don't know. They're graduated from high school, from college, and they don't know how things work. They don't understand something as simple as money. And there's all kinds of people trying to come up with different schemes of, oh, we need this kind of money, credit money and debit money and money that's produced by the government and paper money and it just goes on and on and on. I mean, I can't even list off all the different things that people are trying to come up with as alternative forms of money. And, of course, there should be lots of alternative forms. But you need to understand the nature of money. And paper money in the form of notes, I mean, when people say paper money, all paper money is not the same. Not the same at all. And we'll go through some of that when we start Liberty Radio Live. But I'm just going to give you some other things, like I've got a little note in here called Million Dollar Baby here. And I'm going to quote someone who says, I thought they would cut me off, but since they didn't, I thought maybe it was okay because I'm not working. Who is this person talking? This person is someone by the name of Clayton, who won $1 million lottery and is still collecting food stamps. And somebody says, how come you're still collecting food stamps? Well, I'm not working, so I should get food stamps. She goes on to explain, I didn't really get $1 million, you know, because I agreed to take the lump sum. I only got $700,000 after taxes. Her winnings actually only came to about $500,000. So she didn't really get a whole $1 million, so she should still get food stamps, right? Nevertheless, Clayton believes she still has a right to receive $200 a month from the taxpayers in the form of food stamps credits to go on her little food stamp card. She says, I feel that's okay because, I mean, I have no income. I have bills to pay, she said. I have two houses I have to support. I mean, that's reasonable. Shouldn't she get food stamps? Well, this is the kind of stuff that's going on in the bureaucracy that you have created for yourself, in the civil law that you created for yourself. Oh, okay, we may fix that. We may eventually pass a bill. And I mean, she goes on to say, it's just hard. You know, I'm struggling with her $500,000. And she's not working. Now, you know, somebody with a little gumption get $500,000. She wouldn't buy two houses. She'd buy a business and run it and become financially secure. But no, that's not her thinking. Why? Because it was given to her. There was an interesting study that came out of an effort that went on in South Africa where the people were living in slums and terrible conditions. And so they were going to do something to alleviate this. You know, the people all got together and they took government aid and all kinds of things, and they set it up so that They built these nice little homes, little dome homes, each one that had nice windows, nice doors, and fairly well constructed. They're very simple, but it was clean. They had sanitation facilities. They had running water, usually outside the building, but it was there. Within a few years after handing this over to the poor people of the area, it looked absolutely like a war zone. The doors had fallen off their hinges. The windows were broken out. There was trash everywhere. The smell of urine in the streets was sometimes horrible. Not that there wasn't sanitation available, but they just didn't use it. They didn't work to obtain this giveaway. It was just given to them. And then they thought, well, now you should give me more. And this is what we get from Mrs. Clayton, or Miss Clayton, is that she gets $1 million and a lottery, and she thinks, well, I'm not working, so I should get food stamps. You know, I mean, I have two houses. I need extra money. She bought them cash with her $1 million, or $500,000. This is the thinking that you get when you raise people up in a socialist state. You kill the incentive. I know somebody who went to Soviet Union to teach them after Perestroika came in to teach them free enterprise and how to set up business. And there was all kinds of money and government aid pouring in to help them set up their own businesses. And they wouldn't take them if you gave them to them. And they would just run them into the ground. You need to fall down in order to learn how to get up. You need hard times to learn how to get. No pain, no gain. You can't just give people every time they have a need. You have to teach them how to fill the need. And one of the best ways to do this is to say, gather together not for what you can get, but for what you can give to each other. But give in a way that strengthens each other. And that's not what banks are into. Banks are motivated out of profit. If you have a medical industry that's motivated out of profit, you're going to get a certain kind of product. If you have a money industry that's motivated by profit, you will get a certain type of product and produce from that money industry. If you want to know who should be creating your money, you should be creating your money. The original money, the dollar, comes from the thaler, which is someone who was a silver miner in, I believe, Germany, at least in Europe, and Central Europe in the silver mining area, and they made these coins that were known as thalers and eventually became known as dollars, and that's what a dollar was it was a weight of silver, an ounce of silver, and that was a dollar. And it was made by an individual who just did a real good job, and everybody started using them as money, as a means of exchange. Now people print up a piece of paper, and they, you know, I heard a federal prosecutor who was prosecuting somebody, because he said, wait a minute, the government has always had total control over the production of money. Not true, which we will go through in Liberty Radio Live. But the fact is creating notes, which can be used as money, has been something that people have been doing from the beginning of time, as soon as they learned to write. Banks all over the United States produced notes. They were bank notes. That's why they call them bank notes. And they were redeemable at that bank in real money. And it was a note. It's a contract. You have a right to contract. And banks had a right to contract. Or at least when the banks became chartered, which we will go into, they were producing notes. Now the Federal Reserve produced most of the notes. There's still U.S. notes in circulation. I have a few that are not Federal Reserve notes. They're U.S. notes. There were silver certificates, all sorts of things. But anyway, we're going to have room for callers, and we're going to have a special guest on the next show, hopefully. And we will talk about this thing of usury. And this was all spawned by a question from Mark in Texas, who said, wanted to know about Matthew 25:27, which says, "Thou oughtest therefore to have put money to the exchanger, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury." What was this was in comparison to the three people who had received talents, which was actual coin, silver coin. They received, one had received three, one had received two, and one had received only one. Well, the one who had received one just buried it, didn't do anything with it. He wasted his talent. He just didn't use it up, but he didn't do anything with it. And the others, they used their talent, two talents, three talents, and they produced more talents, which is like seeds. You know, you put seed in the ground and it grows up and you got 10 seeds. 20 seeds, because you put one in the ground. You invested it. That's good, but that's not usury. That's not usury. Usury is something else. And you will be surprised how much usury you're involved in and how the involvement, your involvement in usury has brought you back into bondage. Because to you, it's okay to put somebody else into bondage. Usury is paying for the use of something instead of owning it. You didn't actually own it. You paid for the use of it. And I've told this story before of Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys were going around the countryside and they would come to settlements and they would usher the people out of the houses and burn them down. And then they'd give them hours and hours of lecture on how to become free people. What was happening is people were going out and proving up land for other people where they only got a legal title. And the beneficial interest of the property, legal title does not include beneficial interest. Most of you don't know that because you're all uneducated. But the or you've been educated or indoctrinated. And that's one thing I'd like to point out before the show is over. If you can see the film Indoctrination, and it's about homeschooling and public school systems, it would be a worthwhile film to see. I recommend people seeing it. Can't watch it with your kids, your little kids, but you can certainly watch it. After you watch it, you can make your own decision on whether or not you want your younger kids to see it. But it's about a serious problem in the world today. But anyway, and it's part of the reason why a lot of you don't understand some of the things that we talk about here, because you are all uneducated. But legal title doesn't include the beneficial use of whatever it is you have legal title to. You don't have the right to use it. You have to pay for the right to use it, which is why you have to pay property tax, why you have to buy stickers for your car, is you don't actually own it. You only own the legal title, and that doesn't include the right to use it. The right to use it is held by the one holding the beneficial interest, the one holding what they call the equitable title. And that's not you. That, in essence, that relationship is usury. When you pay property tax, when you pay for that sticker on your car, that is usury. You are paying for the right to use what you have legal title to. And the people in the days of Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys were settling for legal title, and they knew that if the nation was full of people that had settled for a legal title rather than an actual lawful title, including the beneficial interest, that the nation could not remain free. It would not be a nation of free people. Now, there was only about 30% of Americans that were of the landed class that were actually freemen, actually owning land. But today, we don't have that 30%. Yet they're reading things out of the Declaration of Independence like they have a right to throw off the government when they are subjects. They are not able to access all their inalienable rights anymore because they are in debt. And why are they in debt? It's because of this broad term, usury. Usury is not just charging interest at a bank. Usury is far more than that. And what it ends up is that the use of you, you don't even own the use of you anymore. You don't own the lawful right to your labor. You will labor a portion of every day without pay in the world today, because every nation has a system of usury. If you go into the Bible and look up that word usury and the word for tribute, it's all part of the same thing. Tribute is usury. It is part of that same system of usury. So understanding all the biblical quotes about usury is very important. But Matthew 25:27 is simply telling you to do nothing is worse than charging usury. You would be better off charging usury and do something than you would be by doing nothing. Yet modern Christianity tells you that you have nothing to do. Just believe. Just believe. You don't have to do anything. Yet that was worse than anything, according to Christ. Not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who do it the will of the Father. But they say, no, all you have to do is say, Lord, Lord. I accept Jesus as my personal Savior, and you're saved, period. That's it. It's done. You don't have to do anything. But Jesus said the absolute reverse. And that's why you're all under tribute, you're all under usury, and you can't just throw off those who seem to be oppressing you, because you haven't done what the early Americans were doing. There's no pain, no gain. You have to turn around now. You have to repent. You have to go another way. You have to struggle. For real, not like Mrs. Clayton. I'm struggling with my $500,000, so I have to have food stamps because I don't have a job. You would have a job if you bought a business instead of two homes. Now, I don't want to pick on the poor lady. She's a product of the system you have created. You don't need to tear down that system. You know, I poke at it. But what you need to do is build up the system that Christ taught, that Moses taught, that Abraham taught. And that was a system where it was a network bound together by faith, hope, and charity. And if you won't bind yourself together by faith, hope, and charity in a living network like we have here at His Holy Church, then I can't help you. There's no way I can help you. There's no way I can do anything for you. You need to learn to help yourself, and the best way to do that is to start helping others. So we'll be on Liberty Radio Live in a moment, and then later on this afternoon we'll be on Freedomizer, and we'll talk about the more interesting topic.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.